Good evening. You're listening to WNUR 89.3 FM, HD1, Evanston, Chicago. I'm Gabe Shumway, and this is WNUR News at 6. Tonight, tips for what feels like the end of the world, a conversation with Cal Mitchell from the national tour of The Wiz, and advice from experts on how to win your local bar trivia. Those stories and more coming up from Northwestern University. This is WNUR News at 6. Thanks for hopping through. The news cycle can feel like a constant stream of negative information. If the world has been getting you down, we have the answers. Reporter Mika Ellison spoke to experts to get the story on how to overcome that existential dread.
Boat moving up and down again. There's no discharge in the war. Don't look at what's in front of you. Boat.
Does that sound familiar? The poem Boots by Rudyard Kipling, read by Taylor Holmes, has gone viral in recent months, typically set to videos of video game characters, TV shows, and other pieces of media.
Count the bullets in the bandoliers. If your eyes drop, they will get atop of you. Boots.
In one video, Kipling's poem plays over an animation of Elon Musk doing a gesture identical to the Nazi salute, along with other images of politicians and soldiers. It racked up almost 2 million views on Instagram. That video, and many other social media posts, express a sense of existential dread, overwhelm, and general malaise that's ramped up in the last few weeks, spurred by national events like wildfires and the sweeping changes of the Trump administration. Although it might feel like the world is literally ending, it most likely isn't. So what next? I spoke to experts, students, and advocates on how to take care of your mental health, even when it feels like it should be the last thing on your mind. Reverend Julie Windsor Mitchell is the campus minister at University Christian Ministry. She said that in her work with student groups, particularly activists and organizers, she has been seeing a similar sentiment.
It was becoming obvious to me that a lot of people are struggling with burnout or the potential for it.
To combat that, she decided to host an event for student activists to share their experiences, talk about sustainability and activism, and also engage in some self-care. Mitchell has been involved in social justice work since she herself was in college. She has a few tips for how to manage burnout.
Everything in life is about finding balance, and I want to be vocal and active in fighting for just systems in our world, but I realize that I can't do that at my own personal expense. So I have to be very intentional about taking care of myself so that I don't get burned out. Because if I burn out and then I'm just like, oh, peace out, then I am not there to do the work anymore.
She emphasized the importance of communities of care, groups that are not just focused on outward action, but are committed to supporting each other.
And when you do get down, when you do get frustrated, when you do get angry, you have to have someone there for you. And then when someone else is in that situation, you have to be there for them. Because it's very easy to just walk away. And again, if I walk away, then they won. Because that's exactly what they wanted. They wanted me to get so overwhelmed that I didn't know where to start and I just got paralyzed and didn't do anything.
Mitchell says that when the world becomes overwhelming, she focuses on keeping a larger perspective and room for positive emotions, like joy. But she added that negative emotions, like anger and frustration, have their place in this work as well.
Anger is wonderful and amazing because it creates real change in our world. And you called it generative. I love that word. To think of anger as generative, we often think of anger as a bad thing. I don't think it's bad. I think it can motivate us to action and create, more just societies. Mm-hmm. However, it cannot overtake you as an individual because it will consume you and then it leaves you nowhere.
Ben Frank is a senior director of wellness at the National Alliance on Mental Illness Chicago, or NAMI Chicago. He echoed Mitchell, pointing towards the negative sides of anger like cynicism and despair as the enemies of good work.
We talk about burnout as a symptom, but what are the symptoms of burnout? And it's cynicism, it's hopelessness, it's detachment from purpose. Like, if those things are happening, what kind of a life in activism or politics or things that you care about? Like, you're not going to be good at what you do. So we need to retain the ability to care, to empathize, to connect. And all of those things are antidotes to these bad feelings and emotional reactions that we have to what's going on.
He advocates for an approach to recovery and wellness that allows your brain to detach from the digital world and ground itself in the present.
We also need times where our brains like just rest. And there are specific things that you can do that allow your brain to rest. Taking a walk does that. Taking a nap does that. Daydreaming, engaging in like art where you shut off like constant thought and just kind of engage. Being close to somebody without the need to like have a hyperverbal conversation. Sometimes it's just a matter of like, I think there's a lot of physicality that's needed. And when I say that, I think we've gotten into a space, we talk a lot and we express ourselves and maybe write what we're experiencing. But when do we just allow our bodies to be our bodies is a really important question. So that's why exercise, movement in the simplest of forms, like going for a nice slow walk on a, brisk day feels really good because you all of a sudden you're attached to your senses. And it's not just your brain working on overtime.
He said that ultimately, sustainability is key. You have to ensure that you enjoy what you're doing, because you might be doing it for quite a while.
You can say, this is not a hopeless situation. This is how I am today. I want to do something tomorrow, so I'm going to do this for that, and just kind of feed your soul and your body in a way that serves those purposes. Because I think we're not in for a quick scenario. This is some of the things that I'm sure are being discussed might carry on beyond their time at Northwestern, carry into careers, and go ahead and prepare for longevity in those spaces by investing in yourself, investing in curiosity.
Mark Harriman is on the board of Mental Health America of Illinois and has taught mental health law for decades. He says that often, resistance starts with an unexpectedly positive outlook.
So when you think about it, there are so many ways in which the world is better, and that the world has gotten worse in the last few weeks, I think we must acknowledge and we must wrestle with. But it's useful to maybe talk to some old people. And we will get through this because we will fight.
Like Mitchell, Harriman emphasized that even according to the science, it's important to surround yourself with friends and people who share your values, especially when you need someone to tell you to step back.
You may not be able to listen to yourself. You should tell it to your friends, and then they can tell it back to you. You know, you're working too hard on this. We need to go out for a drink or a cup of coffee or whatever. I'm not recommending alcoholism. But you need to go out and have some fun. If you're not having fun, you're not going to have the energy to do the difficult work that must be done.
Medill Senior Evelyn Driscoll has been involved in mental health advocacy through leading her club, Active Minds. She said it can be important to balance what you can do with what needs to be done.
There's a line between being too involved to where it's damaging to your mental health, and then there's also a line between not being knowledgeable enough and being engaged in the world as we like kind of have a duty to do as citizens. And I think what's important, first of all, is to recognize that that line looks different for every single person based on your experience, your mental health, your identities. And so I think just being kind to yourself about where that line stands for you.
She says that world events can be disempowering. The average person often can't do that much to change decisions at a national level. But she says it's important to find a way for you to get involved that shifts your perspective.
I also feel like a major thing is like self-care. It's definitely like such like a buzzword right now, but I do feel like, I don't know, I think it was like Audre Lorde who was like, self-care is a radical act. And I do think like when we're experiencing such scary decisions being made at the federal level, like kind of choosing to take care of yourself is a radical act because it's almost a protest in a way, because it's showing that like, no, my mental health does matter, even though that some of these policies and decisions may indicate that others may not think it does, but I'm choosing to prioritize it.
I asked Driscoll what she would say to the students and others who might feel like taking a step back compromises their work or feel like world events are overwhelming.
I would say that you're not alone, and to lean on your friends and family and the trusted relationships you have, because I think one of the ways that we're going to get through these next couple years is by leaning on those around us, because we can't go through this alone.
These strategies might not prevent the world from falling apart around you, but they might get you part of the way towards holding up your end of it. And according to the experts, sometimes that is literally the best thing you can do. For WNUR News, I'm Mika Ellison.
The beloved musical The Wiz makes its return to Chicago this spring. Sophia Casas sat down with Cal Mitchell, the tour's lion, to hear more.
For over 50 years, The Wiz has entertained audiences with its retelling of The Wizard of Oz through the lens of Black culture with an all-Black cast. After two Broadway productions, an NBC Live special, and a feature film that starred Diana Ross and Michael Jackson, the show's third national tour is gearing up to make its way to Chicago this spring. I sat down with actor Cal Mitchell, who plays the lion in this production, to talk about becoming his cowardly counterpart, his time on tour, and the enduring impact of The Wiz all these years later. Here is that conversation. My first question is, The Wiz has been around, I guess, over 50 years now. There's a lot of casts that come with that, a lot of history. So how does it feel to now be putting your stamp on that?
It's one of those things that I try to wake up every morning and realize, like, it's such an opportunity and gift and a humbling thing to be able to say, like, I am the next bearer of this really important role in this really important show. It does mean so much to me. And sometimes, like, it's a little hard to see it. But then my personal thing is, like, I have to understand, like, it's such a humbling experience to be a part of this, because in the next 20 years, they're going to be looking at this 50th anniversary and who was here and who played these characters, and they're going to see me.
I know that you actually started as an understudy on this tour, and you're now the lion now. Can you talk to me a little bit about the process of getting there and that journey of starting as the understudy for this role before shifting into this role full time?
Absolutely. I think starting in the ensemble really, really grounded me with this show, because it's my first national tour. So obviously I came in excited, but also like really, really nervous, not really knowing what to expect from it. To play Lion now, to receive that promotion, was a little bit like mind-boggling to me at the time. But when we were transitioning into me becoming full-time Lion, it really did dawn on me, like, oh, wow, this is a lot more than I had anticipated. But I also am a person that loves a challenge. It's a little crazy to still look back and be like, I joined this show to be ensemble and to dance with all of my friends. And then, you know, life took a very big turn.
Yeah, but for the better, it seems.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so this role is vibrant, but also, you know, it is at its core the cowardly lions. What is it like to play this role?
And I've said this so many times. Me and Lion sit in like the same space. He's just like on 10, where I may sit at like a very cute 7 as far as like energy wise. Prepping to play him is, I like to be around people. If I'm around people, I'm able to be my most authentic self. And I think that is one of the main tenets of this character. Lion is authentically himself. He just feels as if there's something lacking or something missing that he feels that someone has to give him. He doesn't understand that the thing that he's looking for, this courage, this confidence, it's always been in him. He gives that throughout the show before he even realizes that he always had it.
I know the tour's been going on for some time, but is there anywhere that's coming up that you're really excited to visit?
There's two cities, Washington, D.C. and Chicago. I can't wait. I'm so excited. I have never had the ability or like the opportunity to sit in Chicago and like really like walk around the city and get a feel for what it is. Like usually I'm either like A, passing through, or B, I'm visiting like family, friends, and I'm only there for like maybe a day. So I don't really get to see Chicago. We're going to be there for like a week though. So I'm like, I have to go outside.
Oh my gosh, wait. Oh, I'm so excited for you to get the chance to come here. So The Wiz sort of stands out as this show interpreting The Wizard of Oz as this story that's often told by usually white actors, usually white creatives, but interpreting it this time with Black actors and a distinctly Black lens. You know, 50 years ago, I made an impact, but it's still making waves today. Can you talk a little bit about that?
The Wiz, when it first came out, was seen as something super duper radical, because at that time it was really radical to see an all Black cast being happy and telling the story of the Wizard of Oz from the perspective of Black culture, Black people. I think that same radicalization, it's still here. I realized this year while doing the show, there's an entire generation of Black kids that have never seen The Wiz. And that was like a bit shocking to me and a bit shocking to everybody else in the cast. Like, we all grew up watching The Wiz. Like, it was either you watched it during Thanksgiving or you watched it during Christmas. It was one of the two. It's imperative that Black kids come in and see this show, especially because the story is timeless and because it's coming from our perspective, it's timeless for those kids to see it. What we've also realized is everyone loves The Wiz. Everybody. While, yes, it may be like, oh my God, he's on down the road. And it's happy and it's joyous and it's a story that you already know, but you still fall in love with when you come and see it. It's important for everyone to come in and just like take a breath, and whatever's happening outside of the theater does not matter for 2 hours. Come laugh, come have fun, come yell if you want to, by all means. Like, it's so important for everyone to have that type of like release of hope and, you know, everything's going to be all right, just as long as you know that you are in control of your story and you can ease on down the road too.
Well, Cal, I am so thrilled that you are a part of this. Thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you for having me.
The Wiz runs March 31st through April 5th at the James M. Niederlander Theater. For WNUR News, I'm Sophia Kesa.
Luna's Pub and Grill, located inside Norris University Center, has begun holding Thursday trivia nights. Armed with advice from trivia experts, reporter Vidyuth Schreeder decided to enter this contest.
Whether winning my elementary school's geography bee or crushing my friends in L's Song Association, memorizing obscure tidbits is not a foreign task for me. So naturally, when news broke that Luna's was hosting weekly trivia matches, I decided to step up to the plate and put WNUR News on the campus trivia map. But still, to maximize my chance of achieving victory and learn a little bit more about the game, I phoned in some expert advice. Monica Tiu is an assistant neuroscience professor at the University of San Diego who has researched trivia and competed on Jeopardy. She says accomplished trivia contestants don't just recall facts. They remember and utilize the experience of learning them.
One thing that I noticed that seemed to come up pretty regularly is that a lot of people had what I'll call like Slumdog Millionaire moments. So they would know not only the answers to trivia questions, but they would have these like very detailed memories about the time that they learned that fact or some experience that they had that was very specifically related to it. So like in the movie Slumdog Millionaire, like Dev Patel's character like wins to the end and they think, how could you possibly know all this stuff? And then you discover through his life, he like encountered all the answers to these questions. And so it really seems that people who are good at trivia seem to have brains that for whatever reason, make this kind of memory stick a little bit better.
In addition, cramming pages of niche dates and figures may not be effective preparation. Rather, according to McCormick fourth year Lucia McConnell, who frequently plays trivia, generally keeping up with popular material serves as a more effective study strategy.
The preparation that goes into trivia doesn't take place in the short period of time immediately leading up to a game, but rather just like generally paying attention to things that happen. You want to gradually accumulate important information based on what you know about what kinds of questions are asked.
Now armed with effective strategies, I spent 2 days preparing for an upcoming Luna showdown. Before going to bed, I would scroll through top events on news and entertainment pages, noting down important people and developments. In addition, I tracked situational cues that were present when I learned key facts, be it the room I was sitting in or what I was thinking about. This aimed to boost my episodic memory, the ability to recall information about an experience. Last night, I traveled to Luna's with a few friends to see if my effort paid off. And ultimately, it largely did, as we finished fourth place out of 14 teams. We held second place for the majority of the game, but blundering in the final ABBA-themed round meant, unfortunately, the loser had to fall. But no matter the score, Weinberg fourth year Justin Dines says that trivia nights only improve over time, especially when more friends get involved.
If you go for the first time, there are likely a lot of regulars there. You know, a lot of the time there are like teams of 30-plus-year-olds, and this is really what they do. They love trivia. They go every week. They've been, you know, practicing for a while. So it's easy to get discouraged if you get, like, 15th on your first try, but that's not that big of a deal because you generally just get more familiar with it over time. And then the big piece of advice I'd give for people who want to get into, like, restaurant-style trivia is to make it more than just trivia. So make it a social occasion as well, you know, hanging out with friends. And even if it doesn't go well, you can still look back at the night and say, well, at least I got to talk about this and hang out and spend time with the people I care about. That's kind of, I think, the more rewarding part of the, let's say, hobby than just winning or doing well.
Ultimately, I know that if I want to improve for next time, I'll have to immerse myself even more in pop culture, history, and everything in between. Success at Luna's is anything but trivial. For WNUR News, I'm Vidit Sridhar.
Now for a brief look at the forecast. Why is it raining again? Please make it stop raining again. Who in their right mind thought a rain dance was a good idea? It started yesterday, it's still going tonight, and what do you know, it's coming back again tomorrow morning. If the finals weren't enough, now Northwestern students are truly going through it. The weather has also brought a dense fog over the past 24 hours. Those on the road should stay safe and be cautious with the impaired long-distance views. And for those students who just walk, grab a nice photo on the Lakeville. On the bright side, at least it's warm enough to just make this rain and not snow. Sorry, Anna, but I do not want to build a snowman when I have the news to anchor. Taking a look into the headlines in Evanston, Chicagoland, and across the nation and globe. Northwestern's Associated Student Government held its new Student Organization Funding Senate on Wednesday. 10 new student organizations came forward, with each receiving at least $300. ASG chose to allocate a total of $13,700 of the $15,000 available dollars. The primary elections for Illinois' 9th District are less than 2 weeks away, with a crowded Democratic field. The favorites include Evanston Mayor Daniel Biss, who holds the endorsement of former Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, Kat Abu-Ghazaleh, and State Senator Laura Fine. Biss led a recent Evanston roundtable poll by about 7%, but all three fell within the margin of error. Americans have historically supported presidents in recent declarations of war. Trump's military campaign against Iran looks different. Polls largely range from 27 to 41% support for Trump's actions. In July of 1990, Madonna wore a Celta Vigo soccer jersey on stage during her Blonde Ambition tour. Now, you may be asking, Gabe, what relevance does this have in 2026? Well, the soccer team is on the hunt for this jersey once again, asking online and playing Madonna's songs before kickoff at a recent match. That's all for WNUR News at 6 p.m. For more news updates and reports, follow us on X at WNUR News and Instagram at WNUR News 893. You can listen to these and other WNUR News stories on our website, WNURnews.org. That's WNURnews.org. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Our producer today is the wonderful Sophia Kesa, and our reporters are Mika Ellison, Sophia Kesa, and Vidyut Sridhar. I'm Gabe Shumway. Catch our next newscast next quarter. WNUR News will be back with more amazing stories in the month of April. In the meantime, we will leave our student writers and reporters to study for their finals and enjoy their time away from the classroom. Now, back to scheduled programming.